The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program today, coming up, we'll have actors from the Charleston Community Theater who are presenting the musical Godspell, which opens on the 20th, which I guess is Friday. And that'll be running, just the one weekend, I believe. They'll be singing some of the songs for us live in our studio. First, though, we'll be having the two actors and the director from the Celebration Company at the Station Theater production of the Tony Award-winning play, for Best Play from 2010, called Red, having to do with the artist Mark Rothko. Stay tuned for Live and Local.
O thou who driest the mourner's tear, how dark this world would be if pierced by sin and sorrow here, we could not fly to thee. The friends who in our sunshine live, when winter comes are flown, and he who has but tears to give must weep those tears alone. Oh, who could bear life's stormy doom, did not thy wing of love come brightly wafting through the gloom, our peace branch from above. Then sorrow touched by thee grows bright with more than rapture's ray, as darkness shows us worlds of light we never saw by day.
I know two of you, which means I must know the third one. That was the voice of Tim Erickson from his CD called Soul of the January Hills, and that was a tune called Hope. And all of throughout this CD, he's just singing solo. He's been on our show a couple of times, and he does not look like what you would think somebody singing that particular music would look like. He's got hoops in his ears and all kinds of other jangly things on that I remember both times being sort of struck. But he has a wonderful way of delivering the music that he performs. And I sort of thought that might be a reasonable introduction, as reasonable as one can get, to a play called Red by John Logan, which is the 2010 Tony Award winner for Best Play. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater is presenting it. They opened it last weekend, and it'll continue through the 28th. It's just a two-man play. Features one of the veterans of the station, Gary Ambler, and also Jesse Angelo. And it will be directed by the Celebration Company's artistic director, who is Rick Orr. And I'm pleased to welcome all three of you on the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So I have to admit that Mark Rothko is somebody whose name I'd heard, and that was all. So I had to look up who Mark Rothko was and look at a bunch of paintings and find out a bit about his life, and also about the particular paintings he was creating at the time, or at least that is the setting for this particular play. But I want to ask Rick, what made you choose this play? Because you guys always choose interesting shows, and given the number of plays that are available to be presented, you got to have some reason for choosing the ones you do, and I'm sure.
Well, I think Mark Rothko himself is such an interesting personality,
coming and belonging in New York City at the time of the Abstract Expressionist. And at that time, the play takes place 1958 to 1959. He was offered one of the largest commissions ever offered to a modern artist to do the murals for the Four Seasons restaurant in New York City in the Seagram's Building, designed by Philip Johnson and Mies van der Rohe. But I think even more importantly, for me, it holds the relationships between student, mentor, teacher, father, son, in this relationship in the play between Rothko and his assistant, Ken. And it's certainly most enlightening about the artist, the personality of Rothko, but also as we explore that relationship between Rothko and his assistant through the course of the play.
Were you a fan of Mark Rothko's art before knowing the play?
I knew of his work. His work is extremely recognizable. It's very austere. It's very uncluttered. It's very, and perhaps at first glance one might dismiss it, but I think in doing this play there is so much research available on Mark Rothko and his art and his passion that he showed through his artistic creations. I knew of his work through art appreciation course as an undergraduate many years ago. It so happens the Krennert Art Museum does have a Mark Rothko. It's currently not on exhibit, but they do have one in their permanent collection. But again, such an interesting and important personality at that time period, and it just seems so right for us to do with this play, the Tony Award-winning play, and of course such a great cast. Gary and I have done many shows. I think he remarked in his bio that our first show together was in 1976, and so we've done a few shows together, and Jesse has come on aboard this year. He's a newcomer to the community, and unfortunately, after this show, he's going on to further his studies somewhere unknown yet. So
fortunate for him, perhaps not so fortunate for this particular community.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
Well, I've seen Gary in a number of shows, including another two-person show, two-man show also. The one, I'm blanking on the name, the one with Maury.
Ah, Tuesdays with Maury.
Tuesdays with Maury. I was going to say Travels with Maury, and I knew that was not right because he doesn't go anywhere. Travel with Charlie, that's a whole nother show. And I remember being surprised in that one, not that you could hold your own in a what was virtually a one-man show. I mean, there was another character there, but it was your role that was so captivating. But what surprised me was that, given that the previous shows I'd seen you in, you played these sort of outrageously comic characters, and this was absolutely not that. That makes me really look forward to the possibility of seeing you in this show, because this does not sound, at least from what I've read about Mark Rothko and these particular paintings and his feelings about the Four Seasons and his ultimate demise and so on, that this does not sound like it's going to be an outlandishly comic role for you.
Not a really rollicking role. But I mean, he was a man of wit, but fairly serious fellow, yeah.
Talk about that a little bit, the wit versus the serious.
Well, he was an intellect, and he thought very seriously about his work, and he wanted to be taken seriously. So, you know, in the form of this play, we get this sort of relationship that's more Socratic. It's really sort of a dialogue or an argument about art, the purpose of art, you know, the process of art.
And how much did you need to delve into Mark Rothko himself, his biography, his paintings? And how much did you know already?
Not much at all. I mean, I appreciated the paintings, but not until I started sort of the research, I really didn't understand what he was trying to accomplish. But the biography is quite informative and rather exhaustive, so it's a lot of good information.
So what did you learn that he was trying to accomplish?
I think the whole idea of the movement of his paintings. I mean, they are sort of, his idea was that they would be transcendent, that they would sort of constantly move. And he was very secretive about his process, but he was also very particular about how they should be seen. That's why this is a great conflict in the plays. Finally, he could not let them be seen.
Well, let's set that up a little bit because, I mean, as it happens, the first bit of writing about Mark Rothko that I ran across, mostly by looking at pictures, was about these paintings and his ultimate suicide on the day that these paintings were presented, not to the place for which they were commissioned, but to the place where I guess they ultimately reside in London.
Yes, that's true. And they did get sort of split up. There were a number of them. He painted 30 or 40, I think, but there were only really going to be room for about a half a dozen, I think, in the Four Seasons.
But what was the conflict he had with the Four Seasons? This was a whole aesthetic issue with him, and beyond aesthetics.
Yeah.
Either of you can talk about that.
I mean, he definitely didn't want to appease the bourgeoisie. He didn't want to be a popular painter. And I think when he finally realized that these were going to be in the sort of, as Ken says, this temple of consumption, it kind of turned him off.
Well, I assume that there's a famous quote, I guess, it seems like it ought to be famous anyway, that I can't imagine wouldn't show up in the play, but maybe it doesn't, where he says, let's see, that the reason his real reason for wanting to paint the murals was, quote, something that will ruin the appetite of every son of a bitch who ever eats in that room, unquote.
That's correct.
Which says a lot, and then he ultimately withdrew the whole thing and said, I'm not going to have this happen. Is that line in there?
It is.
Somewhere along, I would think that it would have to be. Well, you know, you brought some scenes along. One, what do you have? One, two?
We have a couple.
Have a couple of them? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you set up the first one for us? And I'm remiss in not letting Jesse introduce his character. Is this a real person?
It is not.
It is not a real person.
Yeah, Ken is a fictional character. And he's slightly based on, is it Dan?
Dan Rice.
Dan Rice, who was a predominant assistant that Rothko had for about 2 years, wasn't it? And Rothko had a couple different assistants throughout, but Ken is definitely a fictional composite of parts of them. But the time and the place is still very accurate, and the commission for these murals is very accurate. So it's interesting to have this juxtaposition of a fictional character that comes into the studio and sort of rivals, shakes up what Rothko is doing with these murals and ultimately in the end challenges Rothko as to the purpose of taking this commission. So it's quite a dynamic duo between them.
So the first scene is early in the play? It looks like from the page
is.
Where you appear to be on.
It is.
Yeah, it's this occurs in the second scene out of five. And there's sort of, Ken has just ruined, in the eyes of Rothko, has ruined this moment of inspiration where Rothko's grasping an idea to paint, to continue to paint a piece that's right in front of him. And Ken interrupts with something that the painting needs, and so the dialogue sort of begins right after that.
Gary Ambler and Jesse Angelo from the play Red by John Logan, which they're presenting as part of the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana through the 28th.
What does red mean to me? You mean scarlet? You mean crimson? You mean plum, mulberry, magenta, burgundy, salmon, carmine, carnelia, coral? Anything but red. What is red?
I meant sunrise.
Sunrise?
I meant the red at sunrise. You know, the feeling of it.
Oh, the feeling of it. What do you mean, the feeling of it?
I didn't mean red paint only. I meant the emotion of red at sunrise.
Sunrise isn't red.
Yes, it is.
I'm telling you it's not.
Sunrise is red, and red is sunrise. Sunrise is heartbeat. Red is passion. Red wine, red roses, red lipstick. Beets, tulips, peppers.
Arterial blood.
That, too.
Rust on the bike on the lawn.
And apples. And tomatoes.
Dresden firestorm at night. The sun in Rousseau, the flag in Delacroix, the robe in El Greco.
A rabbit's nose. An albino's eyes, a parakeet.
Florentine marble. Atomic flash. Nick yourself shaving, blood in the Barbasol.
The ruby slippers. Technicolor. That foam to the Kremlin on the president's desk.
Russian flag, Nazi flag, Chinese flag.
Persimmons, pomegranates. Red light district, red tape, rouge.
Lava, lobsters, scorpions.
Stop sign, sports car, a blush.
Viscera, flame, dead fauvists.
Traffic lights, Titian hair.
Slash or wrists, blood in the sink.
Santa Claus.
Satan. So. Red.
Exactly.
Well, a bit of a look at Mark Rothko, at least part of his outlook on things. Doesn't seem to be altogether positive, at least in that particular scene. Rick Orr is artistic director and also of the State Celebration Company and also director for the show. I know you've had a weekend of performances already, so these guys are supposed to be at the point of having the polished performance. But I have always been curious what a director does when there's only one person in the cast or only two people in the cast. So I'm curious what you might say to these guys now if you were coaching what they just did.
Well, to back up a little, this painting several technical issues, and I started directing this show earlier than usual because of those technical issues to address. We've had a couple local artists on board to help us with the technical aspects of stretching a canvas and priming and working on a stretcher. Jerry Savage has been on board, and we made a visit to his local studio. Glenn Davies, a muralist here in the community, has been looked on in the show a few times, but there are so many technical aspects that we had to incorporate in the realm of this play that we started very early working on this, having a read-through. I think it was in January. And they set out to the two actors to learn the lines, because with all the technical aspects occurring in the action of the two characters, they needed to be very comfortable with their lines, per se, and to be off book, per se, as the characters, to experience all the technical qualities we had to embrace in doing the show. So we've had a very good opening week. The audiences have been enthusiastic. I think the first two nights received standing ovations, and these guys are at their peak. They're doing such a tremendous job in this this play with the characters that they have embraced, and it's in their hands now. I'm very proud of the achievement they both accomplished, and we have two more weeks to run at the show at the Station Theater.
There's always something that something can improve from show to show. I mean, whether you're at your peak and have been doing it for 100 shows,
sure,
and might have 500 more. I just heard a piece on I think it was on NPR about some woman who got the Guinness Book of World Records for playing the same role for 25 years or something like that. And she said she never gets tired of it, and you know, one always tries to improve. But I'm really want to kind of go back to the process of directing.
Sure, sure.
And even if you invent something that you might say to these guys, I mean, do you talk about the rapidity of the way in which they do a line? You know, you should look at him here, or you should not look at him there, or you know.
Well, given the fact that it's live theater, obviously live theater, and at this point, I often am at every show, and at the end of the show, I might have a slight comment to make. But at this point, these two actors have worked so closely together, developing this particular relationship, that in my eye and what I'm seeing now is simply a growth as actors into those character roles, whereby they just become more real and they're still making a few discoveries along the way as quite credible actors in the role. So again, it's just they're becoming comfortable in the process, and again, it's live theater. So you know, some things will continue to grow and develop and embellish, you know, the characters that John Logan has so greatly written for the play Red.
But at this point in the show, once you've sort of let them go, they grow themselves.
They do. They do.
Which I can imagine. And how does it feel to you guys, having just done a weekend's worth of performances and looking back at the script? Because, you know, you're looking at the script as you're reading these bits, but you're certainly not doing that on stage. Does that?
And I find it very interesting because I think no matter how many times you do the role or do the play, when you come back to the raw words of the playwright on a page, I think there's always something that you're going to discover, even if it's not a new interpretation of those words as much as something sparks you that you didn't realize before, something that you didn't notice before. Maybe it's a turn of phrase, or maybe it's the way the playwright has led you into a conversation or out of a conversation. There's always new things to discover. And I think, as Rick was saying, with the fact that it's live theater, that's the one thing that allows you to keep growing each night, because we walk on stage with the goal of playing, truly playing these characters and letting them simply show up for each other and tell the truth. And such miraculous discoveries are made with that in mind, with that as a goal.
And the form, you know, the form of a two-character play, it sort of lends itself to a certain dynamism on stage. It has to be the sort of tension between two personalities. So it,
you have another scene from much later in the play, not much later in the play?
A little past midway in the play.
Anything we need to know about what intervened before getting to this scene, or not necessarily?
Without giving away too much, we've just primed a large canvas, and we've learned something about Ken's past, which prompts the rest of the scene. I really don't want to tell you too much.
That's fine. It's Gary Ambler and Desi Angelo from the play Red, which is current at the Station Theater in Urbana.
When I was a kid in Russia, I saw the Cossacks cutting people up and tossing them into pits. At least I think I remember that. Maybe someone told me about it. I'm just being dramatic. Hard to say sometimes.
How old were you when you came here?
10. We went to Portland, lived in the ghetto alongside all the other thinky-talky Jews. I was Marcus Rothkowitz then.
You changed your name.
My first dealer said he had too many Jewish painters on the books. So Marcus Rothkowitz becomes Mark Rothko. Now nobody knows I'm a Jew.
Can I ask you something?
Can I stop you?
Are you really scared of black?
No. I'm really scared of the absence of light.
Like going blind?
Like going dead.
And you equate the color black with death?
Doesn't everyone?
I'm asking you.
Yes. I equate the color black with the diminution of the life force.
Black means decay and darkness?
Doesn't it?
Because black is the lack of red, if you will.
Because black is the opposite of red. Not on the spectrum, but in reality.
I'm talking about in painting.
Then talk about painting.
In your pictures, the bold colors are the Dionysian element, kept in check by the strict geometric shapes, the Apollonian element. The bright colors are your passion, your will to survive, your life force. But if black swallows those bright colors, then you lose that excess and extravagance, and what do you have left?
Go on. I'm fascinated by me.
Lose those colors, and you have order with no content. You have mathematics with no numbers. Nothing but empty, arid boxes.
And trust me, as you get older, those colors are harder to sustain. The palette fades, and we race to catch it before it's gone.
From John Logan's play Red, and won the Tony Award for Best Play in 2010. I'm starting to get the idea why. Gary Ambler and Gary Ambler and Jesse Angelo are the two actors presenting the characters of Mark Rothko. And Ken, does Ken have a last name?
He does not.
He does not. He's just Ken.
Just Ken.
A foil for the playwright's own imagination, or for all those critics who wanted to ask him things or challenge him with things and so on. And Rick Orr is directed the show. It runs through the 28th, all shows at 8 o'clock. And to make reservations, you can phone 217-384-4000, or I believe you can now do them online at stationtheater.com. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for coming in on Live and Local.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Our program today is made possible with support from Krannert Art Museum, appropriately enough. Reservation information for the Friday, April 20th benefit reception for the opening of Petals and Paintings is available at 244-0516. This exhibition features floral displays by designers from across the Midwest, inspired by works in the museum's permanent collection. Stay tuned next for another live preview, this time of the musical Godspell, being presented by Charleston Community Theater this weekend. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Today's broadcast on Live and Local is made possible with support from 40 North 88 West, presenting the 10th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 19th through the 22nd. With venues throughout the county, the festival, in conjunction with the local business community, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, culture, and theater. Information on this year's festival is at 40north.org. Next up on Live and Local, we have a first-time appearance, I think, by folks from Charleston Community Theater. And I'm always delighted to welcome new people to the show. Thank you very much for coming in. They're going to be presenting the musical Godspell on the 20th, opens on the 20th, and it just runs through the 22nd for three shows at Wesley United Methodist Church on 4th Street in Charleston. And I heard about it. Well, actually, I don't know where I heard about it first, but it may have been from Kathy Shagrin, who's the director. I suspect that it was, and she's brought along some of the cast and pianist, who is also happens to be a member of the cast, who are going to be presenting this show. And I remember, vaguely remember, when this show came out, which says how long ago it was, and I guess I hadn't realized it. And I also just looked this up before we came on here, because I didn't quite remember the sequence to see which came first, Godspell or Jesus Christ Superstar, and they came out in the same year. Wow. 1971, which was just kind of incredible. Anyway, thank you all for coming in. Thanks, Kathy, for letting me know about it. And why did you choose Godspell for the season for Charleston Community Theater?
I've loved the show for years. I grew up with Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar, and I've always loved the music in it. And normally Charleston Community Theater performs at the Tarbell Arts Center, which would have been a slightly small place for us for this show. And so I approached the pastor of the church that I attend. I really wanted to do it. I just felt like the time was right. And so I went to our pastor and said, would you ever be interested in doing a show here? And he said, yes, that they would. And so I then went back to Charleston Community Theater and told them what I was thinking about doing. And I sit on the board of CCT. And then they said, well, why don't we make it a show in our regular season? So it became our third show of the year. I like the music. I just I think the story is worth telling. It's powerful, and I like the topic of community that Godspell talks about. You know, these people come together in a group, and you can put it in just about any setting. And Jesus walks into this community. He meets them where they're at in terms of their faith, and he doesn't push anything. He just invites everyone to listen to what he's got to say, and then at the end of the show, they form a community and they're able to carry on the work that, that he came here to talk to us about. And I just think that's a great message. And then with the music all being sort of different styles, it was just something I just had wanted to do for a long time. So,
well, I looked at the. It's been so long since I saw this show. I mean, I think I was a kid when I saw the show the last time. I've never seen it in a professional setting. Saw it in my own community in Pennsylvania, and I sort of forgot what some of the songs were. And you've brought on several to at least sample. So why don't we start with the first one? Who's up first?
Well, I believe Richard Jones, who plays Jesus, is going to sing part of the song of All for the Best. That's actually a duet that he sings with Judas. In the first act, they tell a lot of parables, and they deal with how to treat each other, and then they talk about the world. And this is a song that talks about there's a little bit of everything going on in the world, and everything is all right.
Richard Jones in the role of Jesus from Charleston Community Theater production of Godspell this weekend.
When you feel sad or under a curse, your life is bad, your prospects are worse. Your wife is sighing, crying, and your olive tree is dying. Temples are graying and teeth are decaying and creditors weighing your purse. Your mood and your robe are both a deep blue. You bet that Job had nothing on you. Don't forget that when you get to heaven, you'll be blessed. Yes, it's all for the best.
Just a teaser of that song from Godspell. Boy, I really have forgotten what these songs are. What these songs sounds like. You know, one of the things I remember about, I guess I've seen, there's a film of this, isn't there? At least one film?
There is
I
a
guess
film. I've seen I'm not a big fan of the film, but there is a film.
It takes place in like some sort of...
It's in New York.
In New York. I remember a chain link fences and whatnot.
Now, what is really cool about that is that when the thing first starts, Jesus... is kind of walking down the streets or gathering people, and people kind of leave whatever they're doing and join, you know. And so then he gathers up this group of people, and then they end up taking the musical into all different parts of the city.
But as I remember, at least from that movie, and I can't now remember if the stage version that was typically Jesus was made up to look almost like a clown.
Yeah, we're not doing
like.
That.
I was going to ask if is that something that is that was then and this is now, we do it different ways, or
you know,
it often
no,
stays
I don't
that
think it's
still.
That is then. I think every direct, you know, Godspell could be done if you had 1,000 directors. Every show I think would look a little differently, and it's not that I think that is bad. It's just not what I wanted to do with it. Our production being staged is in a church. And what we've done is make it look like a little corner of the church that hasn't been used for a long time. So it says something like church under construction, and there's scaffolding and these big boxes in there. And since we're doing it in a church, I wanted it to be that these people just show up at this church. They're here in this place and time, and then Rich shows up. But I have heard of Godspell being done in a hospital setting, like an emergency room. You could many productions. It's kind of an inner city look. But I didn't think that worked for where we were doing it, which was in the front of a sanctuary.
So Rich shows up looking like Rich?
Well, he's in a bowling shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, I have carpenter jeans on and a long sleeve T-shirt, and I put a bowling shirt on. And
actually, everyone kind of looks like they grabbed something out of a rummage sale box.
Just like all of us here today, right?
Yeah.
It's from Charleston Community Theater's production, being at Wesley United Methodist Church there. Did they say to you, sure, we'll do a play if it's a Christian play?
No, they didn't, no.
They just said, sure, you can do a play here.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the pastor was familiar with Godspell. But no, they didn't. They've been very welcoming. It's been a great experience. I'm sure they wouldn't want to do Chicago there, but yeah, but no, they've been great. And we've been rehearsing there since mid-February, and we have been in just about every room of the building, and now we're in the sanctuary making quite a mess of it every night, but they've been great. As a matter of fact, the pastor, Wally Carlson, is in the pit, and so is one of the other guys at the church, so we've got a great band for this show.
That's good to hear. Is it like a combo, a rock combo?
Five piece. We've got percussion, keyboard, let's see, Gay plays mandolin and
violin.
Mark Essery is on the stand-up bass. I'm not sure what the proper name for that is.
And then he plays
electric guitar. So is it four piece? I said five.
Five.
Wally plays guitar. So, and I tell you, they are awesome.
And does it? Do you have to be a Christian to enjoy this show?
No, I don't. I don't. I think the musical speaks to everybody. And you know, when you read the beginning of Matthew, you know, Jesus says he didn't come down to deal with the people who were doing okay. He came down to talk to people who weren't doing okay. So I think anybody, it works for everybody.
That was the first drag to performance of Godspell by my high school friend who loved theater, and she was Jewish. She said, we're going to go to see this great show called Godspell. I'm like, okay.
Well, everybody was Jewish back then anyway, at least
in that part
of the world. Not everybody. But, you know, at that point, so was Jesus. Elizabeth Hall be there speaking. She's our pianist for today's show, and you're also singing one or more roles in the show itself.
Elizabeth is featured in Oh Bless the Lord, which is a really rocking number in the first act.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
We all have our own individual song that we're responsible for,
right,
which is kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, we've got three other songs to at least touch on, so who's next?
I think that'd be Ken. Ken is actually a choir director at First Presbyterian in Charleston, and he sings All Good Gifts in the show, which is also one of the numbers from the first act that comes about after the parable of the sower and the seed, how the different seeds fell on different ground, and then Ken sings this song.
Ken Hall.
Yes.
We plow the fields and scatter the good seed on the land. But it is fed and watered by God's almighty hand. He sends the snow in winter, the warmth to swell the grain, the breezes and the sunshine, and soft, refreshing rain. All good around us are sent from heaven above. So thank the Lord, so thank the Lord for all his love. I really want to thank you, Lord.
Ken Hall from Charleston Community Theater's production of Godspell with Elizabeth Hallby at the keyboard. Except for Jesus, do the other characters have names? I mean, are they actual characters? Or are they just people who sing songs?
The other character that is actually named is the fellow who plays John the Baptist and later on Judas. But everybody else in the play uses their own first name.
So they're just people.
They are people.
Just people.
Right. Yeah,
it always struck me, or at least it now strikes me as interesting, coming back to God's Godspell versus Jesus Christ Superstar coming out the same year. They're both kind of rock-based musicals. Superstar, more of what they'd call a rock opera, mm-hmm. I guess. But it always seemed to me, and this is, you know, the song so far reminding me a little bit, that Godspell is a little bit more of possibly a teaching musical.
I'd say that's very
even
accurate.
Though Superstar right. is more biblical, because
right.
almost every word in that thing comes right out of the
right.
Bible.
There are no spoken words in Jesus Christ Superstar. No. It is a rock opera. There's nothing spoken. In Godspell, much of the first act is taken up with parables. He comes in. They have an opening song. Everyone in the play is baptized. And then Jesus starts teaching. And his job in the first act, what Rich wants to do in the first act, is start trying to create a community, pull everybody together. And so he uses the parables to teach. And then as things start to rock and roll a little bit, then they sort of are confident enough to stand out there and say, okay, I'm going to tell this, and I'm going to tell this part, and I'm going to tell that. There's a lot of teaching that takes place in the show. I don't know if anybody wants to add anything to that, but
I'm actually coming back to Ken a little bit, since you introduced him as somebody who does the choir at one of the churches mm-hmm. in Charleston. Are you often on stage, or is this a new thing for you to get away from the conductor's role and suddenly, now I've got to perform?
Well, it's been a long time since I've been on stage. I was on stage in high school and college and a few years after that, but it's been a long time since then. But it's been real exciting and fun to do it again. And I was actually brought on board I've also been the vocal coach but got real excited about it and decided to try out. And I've always loved this one song that I'm singing, All Good Gifts, so it's a real privilege.
So did you say, I'm going to try out if I can do this?
Well, kind of that way. I said, if I can sing that song, and so I got a chance to do it. So.
Well, if you're the vocal
Ken's
coach.
Ken's kind of got double duty, because he is the vocal director for the show, and then it was pretty obvious through auditions that Ken's was the voice that we really needed to have for All Good Gifts, and so he's been doing double duty all along.
Sure. Well, that makes it. I would think that would make it extra tough. I mean, I've music directed
and extra
shows,
good
and
too.
I'd never want to be on stage at the same time. Although I guess people do it. Well, we've got two more folks to bring on. Do we have the girl next?
Yes.
We have this one girl
yes.
here.
Yes, Alyssa. Her character in the show is. She's a lot of fun. Her character's a bit out there. In the original production, the girl playing the role of her name was Sonia. And in the notes you read that she was a little bit of a Mae West character. And so she gets to sing this sort of burlesque type song called
Turn Back, O Man.
Turn Back, O Man.
Alyssa Obradovich from Charles Community Theater's production of Godspell.
Forswear thy foolish ways. Old now is earth, and none may count her days. Da 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 da. Yet thou, her child, whose head is crowned with flames, still will not hear thine inner God proclaim. Turn back, O men.
Hello, Radio Land.
Turn back, O men.
Hope you're enjoying our show.
Turn back, O men.
Come out and see us.
Forswear thy foolish ways.
And I'm sure that's really just a teaser of what that song must look like.
You haven't seen the costume yet.
No, I was wondering about that. Now I remember that's my favorite song. Which probably says something more
now,
about me than about the show.
Those words are from the Episcopal hymnal originally, believe it or not.
Well, I do believe it. And, I mean, it's when I saw Turn Back, Oh Man, I think, okay, now how does that tune go? Because I remember a, you know, there's a setting by Gustav Holst that he does, I think it's
yes.
Holst, that he does of that particular hymn. And it's a totally different character, except that it's in a minor, I mean, Nature
but all the words are there.
Key.
I went and compared them, and the words are exactly the same.
Just turn it on its head for the overall presentation. Charleston Community Theater is presenting Godspell this weekend for shows on Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. It's going to be at Wesley United Methodist Church in Charleston. And this is the last show of your season, I think.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, how many shows do you typically do in a
season? We do three a year.
Three shows in a season. Mm-hmm. And you had a bit of a hiatus since, what, you were founded in 63, something like that?
You know, I don't know all the history about it. I do know that the theater was established, and then it went for years and years and years, and then it died off. I don't know why. And then in about 2000, I think, Jeannie and Pat Lenihan wanted to start it up again, and they pulled together some people who wanted to do some local theater, and the group got started again. So the new I don't know what to call it, like the new season started about 10 years ago, a little bit over 10 years ago, and we always do three shows a year.
Always musicals?
No, hardly ever a musical.
Really? So mm-hmm. usually just
usually a straight play.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have the man with the guitar who's been sitting here patiently, and I gather you're going to be accompanying yourself in this particular song.
I am.
Stan McMorris.
This number is called Beautiful City. It's not always included. It happens in the second act towards the end of the show when the group is now formed, a community, and they sing this beautiful song in Act 2.
And Stan plays the role of Stan.
He does.
Out of the ruins and rubble, out of the smoke, out of the night of struggle, can we see a ray of hope? One pale thin ray reaching for the day. We can build a beautiful city. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can build a beautiful city. Not a city of angels, but we can build a city of man. We may not reach the ending, but we can start. Slowly but truly mending, brick by brick, heart by heart. Now, maybe now, we start learning how we can build a beautiful city. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can build a beautiful city. Not a city of angels, but we can build a city of man.
Again, just another teaser of these songs, bringing us literally a sampler, but it's great to have these folks live in our studio. And again, welcome to Charleston Community Theater. We hope we'll have you back for
another
live and local presentation in the coming season. Which gives me a reason to say to our listeners out there that I am always looking to know about groups that haven't so far appeared on our show, either literally appearing on the show or even showing up on the calendar that I'm about to give just a little bit of. because we try to represent all the communities in our listening area. So you can always let me know about your group, about your event, by writing to willcalendar@illinois.edu, W-I-L-L calendar@illinois.edu. Charleston Community Theater putting on Godspell this weekend, Friday through Sunday. Their website is simply charlestoncommunitytheater.org. Tickets will be available at the door prior to each performance. And can they also be bought on the website?
Not on the website, no. But if they dial that number, you can either you can reserve tickets there. We're also going to be making tickets available at the church tomorrow and Thursday from about 5 to 8 p.m.
And that's Wesley United Methodist
right.
Church in
Charleston.
You can
just come in and buy a ticket if you want.
Sure. Okay, great. Kathy Shagrin is the director, and we've been pleased to welcome Richard Jones as Jesus, Alyssa Obradovich, Ken Hall, Stan McMorris, and Elizabeth Halby here from Charleston Community Theater. Thanks very much for coming up and making the drive.
Thank you very much.
And best of luck with the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A couple other things going on in our listening area. Well, several other things going on. For some reason, I don't have anything on the calendar for today, which seems rather strange. There must be things happening. But tomorrow, Sinfonietta Camera is giving a rush hour concert called Northern Lights at the Krannert Center in Urbana at 5:30 in the evening. Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble is playing at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Illinois Central College Guitar Ensemble is playing at the ICC Recital Hall in Peoria tomorrow night at 7:30. The Outside Track play Irish music on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and we'll be welcoming them back to the show tomorrow. The traditional Irish music session happens every week at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And the Ragbirds are a folk pop world fusion group playing at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus Wednesday evening at 9:30. Those are just some of the things going on in our area. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. And unusually, I've left myself with a few seconds to mention some of the things that I skipped on the calendar. It usually goes the other way around. Let's see. Donnie Heitler is playing his weekly solo keyboard jazz gig at the Great Impasta in Urbana Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock. Cliff and Company play acoustic music at the Clark Bar in Champaign Wednesday evening at 6:30. And the Thornton Wilder play, Our Town, is being presented by the University of Illinois Theater Program at the Krannert Center in Urbana Thursday through Sunday. It's live and local on FM 90.9.